Deb, a new media coordinator. I want to ask for your help to support KBOO in our year-end giving campaign and to help spread the word. If you have a social media account, find KBOO Radio on your social media of choice and share our posts. Promote KBOO on your own social media. Tell your friends why you support and encourage them to do the same. You can find more information on the KBOO website, including already written posts and pictures that you can use to share on your social media. Go to kboo.fm/promote KBOO. Thank you.
Please, Mr. Redman, don't put me out in the street.
Community Alliance of Tenants is working to increase awareness in Washington County of the statewide law SB 608 that was passed in early 2019. It limits rent increases and no-cause terminations for residential leases. There is a temporary bilingual English and Spanish hotline set up for Washington County renters with questions about SB 608, rent increases, no-cause termination notices, and/or lease non-renewal notices. The phone number is 503-644-3007. Again, that's the Renter's Right hotline phone number for Washington County every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. through January 30th at 503-644-3007. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm right in the middle of solving that riddle known as raising the rent.
Hey, Grump Grump. Good morning, good morning. This is the last show, not forever. It's the last show of the year. Can you believe it? And next year can't be any, well, can it be worse? I don't know. I'm gonna say it's up to you whether it's worse or not. This is KBOO 90. Why should I blame you? No, it's up to Trump. Oh, my goodness. All right, KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor, Joe Uris. I'm Joe. Abe isn't here. He's on vacation. And it's time for you to talk to us, and I'll talk to you, and we'll always find common ground, maybe. 231-8187. That's 231-8187. I'm somewhat appalled as I've been reading more and more history and realizing, and this is a thing, those of you who are older, and I think a lot of our audience may skew older, the Cold War essentially was driven largely by the technologies of war, by the corporations of war, and when the Soviet Union collapsed of its own failing economic order and political order, and Gorbachev was the head of the Soviet Union, a deal was made. Basically, short-range ballistic missiles and of a nuclear type and so on were done away with on both sides. And there was an agreement, really, not to expand NATO into what had been the Soviet territories. Well, that agreement has gone by the wayside, and essentially, the betrayals that we carried out are coming home to roost. In fact, the behavior, the crazy behavior of the Trump administration in Ukraine is a product of all that. I don't want to spend a long time in a history lesson, but really, we did you know what to the pooch. And we lost a chance to work together for a productive, safe, environmentally sound world, which led me in a moment of daftness to write a stupid poem, which, because I have control of this microphone, I think I'll read you. Now, when I say stupid, I am not kidding, but here it is. And it's about a mystical god called Gaia. You've all probably heard of her. She preceded the Olympic gods, the Olympus gods, and probably never existed. But here's my mythic poem. Gaia is angry. all the plans, all the buildings, all the books, all the wisdom, all the music, yeah, the music, all the love, all the hate, none of these matter when Gaia is angry. Prayer won't do it. Lots of stuff ownership won't do it. And it makes it it obscures even more the situation. All these distractions are self-serving and fail. Gaia is not distracted. Distraction may keep us from seeing Gaia's wrath, but Gaia is angry. And we smart monkeys with all these businesses, all these toys, are just making Gaia more angry. Now, that ain't a great poem, I acknowledge. But, you know, when you jot something down and you have a moment on the radio, you can't help putting something out. But I like the myth of Gaia. It's certainly a myth. Because it does do several things. It emphasizes the notion of creation as being in the hands of a mother, of a woman. That's number one. Number two, it is really about early religion in the Greco-Roman Empire, Greco-Roman world, and it really is a pointed reminder of the disasters we are heading into outside of the possibility of immediate conflict, looking toward the reality of global warming. As we all fiddle, this planet is burning. And it's an overwhelming truth. Now, that does not forgive us, that does not excuse us from making things better as we can and as we should. The existence of a Trump, the existence of right-wing governments all over the world at this time, is very frightening. It's frightening on the scale of humanity, and it's frightening on the scale of the planet itself. We humans really do face a point of extinction. It's important to remember that we all kind of assume we're the highest evolved creature, and it's all cool. Well, we may be the highest evolved creature, but it ain't all cool. And remember that the dinosaurs, we don't think they were smart, but we don't know, were wiped out with just a whim of Gaia, just a ball of rock and fire hitting what we now understand to be the Caribbean. And that giant tidal wave, that giant explosion, took away all the land animals, not all the mammals. Mammals were smart enough, little creatures that they were, to hide. It did not knock out all the dinosaurs, because now we're beginning to understand that the boids may be the survivors of that. The birds really might be the dinosaurs of the past. I'm reading this because it's not something I want to get into a conversation about. I don't want to discuss the validity or lack of validity of Gaia. I don't want to make a metaphor turn into a reality. But I'm pretty much convinced that we humans are not as smart as we think we are, and we are in serious trouble. And I'm really interested in having a more profound conversation. We all know that Trump is a fool, an ass, a dangerous man, who by no means earned his wealth. And we all understand that what he does continually is to serve himself. It's all about self-service. And we also understand that he and his cohort and those who he benefits, largely conservative business interests, will stop at nothing to have their way. Meanwhile, the other party, the Democratic Party, seems to be struggling with the definition of itself. Should it be a centrist kind of Joe Biden-y world of fighting and drawing supporters? Or should it be something a little more socially democratic, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders world of leadership for the next election? And all of that is decided in a peculiar, indirect way. In fact, we don't even have, in many, many states, we don't even have paper ballots, so that, for example, Russia can interfere once again in our election. And now we discover that our Secretary of State is, I think today, landing in the Eastern Bloc country, you know, landing in Kiev. And this is like a day after our relatively smart service people, relatively smart diplomats have left. And we have a situation where the president of Kiev is desperate for weapons to knock out Russian tanks who are engaged in a shooting war in Ukraine to gain back what they feel that they lost in the collapse of the Soviet Union. So this is all really happening. And, pardon me, it seems as though most people are very confused about all this. Now, that's just on the international scale. On the local scale, immediate scale, the streets are crowded with people who do not have the money, the means, or in many cases, the health to find decent shelter, to find a home, to find a place to rebuild or build their lives. And that is a prime problem. And solving that would be nice. But will it happen? I sort of doubt it. So that's the situation. Things collapse locally. The climate goes to hell. The danger of war and the opportunism of Trump all overwhelm us. And it's the end of the year. And I want to know, I'm going to quote Lenin here, what is to be done? If you have an idea of how to make things better, or at least make them more interesting, you should call me. Otherwise, I can talk history with you until we're all blue in the face. But really, I really have to ask, what is to be done? And, you know, people will say, oh, you should elect Bernie, or we should go green. Or it's not to say we should, but how can we? What is possible in this incredibly totalitarian universe? We don't feel it as totalitarian, I think, particularly out here in the West. We feel it as a series of minor crises, maybe even major crises, you know, oil trains, ports to export liquefied natural gas, you know, stuff that's bad in the environment. We see people on the street, we get angry at them, they make a mess, we don't like them, they have no choice. This is a city, for example, that hasn't put in enough porta-potties or showers or shelters to deal with these populations, and we're unlikely to. Meanwhile, you try living on the street. You see how crazy it will make you. If you're at all old or young, you're facing a real and universal crisis. And will all of us respond at least with humanity in that situation? I am very dubious. I will go back to my silly poem and say Gaia, representing all of the forces of creativity in this case, is angry. And she has turned her face away from us. And this is really scary. And it's way, way beyond the point of talking about most of the issues we discuss and the ways in which we discuss them. Now, it does not mean that we don't have horrible racism, horrible anti-Semitism, horrible anti-Islamic sentiments, all this other stuff going on at the same time. And it does not mean that we still haven't created a social network, a social foundation for the lives of ordinary people, and we're still not paying people a real living wage. So, in the midst of that, in the midst of a crisis of water, of air, of land, in the midst of an advancing sense of doom, how do you think of this, and what do you think you want to actually say out loud on the air would be the prime thing you would want to do at this time to make things better or even different. So I'm throwing that out there. I got lots of data, lots of stuff here, but really, at the end of the year, after all the talk, I end up saying to you, the audience, okay, this is talk radio. Why don't you talk? Tell me what you're thinking. How bad or good do you think things are? What is the future? How would you have that future be? I remember in the last election, everyone was very excited about the Green Party candidate. And she was later seen hanging out with Putin and other totalitarian opportunists in Russia. And we all were very forgiving of that, or maybe we weren't. But the number of people who voted for the Green Party, ironically, almost certainly changed the balance, which knocked Hillary Clinton off. Now, I don't think Hillary was a great candidate for president. I don't think the Clintons are a great family to lead the country. But that's beside the point. They were and are head and shoulders above the idiot who acts like he is a mature genius, or no, something, what is it? Stable genius. A stable genius. So, 503, you know, it's time to call, 503-287-5915. Give me a call. Tell me what you want to do to fix the world. 231-8187. 503-231-8187. I'm pausing here mainly because it is the last time this year that we'll be doing this show. Next year we'll all be happier, brighter, and more hopeful. But I have to tell you, it looks bad. It looks bad. And our intellectual efforts, our analysis may not be up to the problems that we face. Certainly, as I suggested in my bad poem, certainly it is the case that our arguments, our discourse, our struggles are as nothing compared to the potential destruction that will come with global warming. So I do really want to hear from you. I have noticed, by the way, that the city government is fiddling while people are homeless. I have noticed that there are still oil trains moving around. I have noticed that all the things I would have hoped would have been blocked just logically, these are not radical things, these are things that would not end capitalism, but rather limit it, are not happening. And it's not clear to me that they will happen. So I think this stupid poem of mine might have more truth than not. Gaia is angry. And the reason why I chose Gaia as my mythic figure is because she is the really first Greco-Roman Earth Mother. So let's hear from you. 231-8187. Edie, you're on the air.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Thanks a lot.
One of my ways that I am answering your question on how to make a better world and not give in to the corporate desired despair, cynicism, and divide and conquer, or fighting my allies, is to focus on what solutions we know work. If you go to drawdown.org, Drawdown, or the Pachamama Institute Alliance, you can see the top 100 already proven, already available, already functioning natural systems and technologies political, social policies that draw down the greenhouse gases and restore, regenerate our ecosystems. And that always involves social economic justice. If we have women empowered and educated with access to family planning, that does a lot in reducing the carbon emissions. If we are growing healthy forests, but one of the things we can do is simply address the refrigerant. That's number one.
That's it?
Oh. That's a drawdown book, and take each one of these that are accessible within Portland, rewrite it as to policy and ordinance for city, county, and state action, and get around that. We can meet starting next week every Tuesday at 6 p.m. at the Extinction Rebellion, where we're looking at what has hundreds of years of research shown works in bringing about a revolution. It always has to be peaceful. It always has to be inclusive. It has to be nonviolent. And it has to have regenerative agriculture and regenerative culture. And what works to bring that out? 3.5% of the population. How do we do that? Look at what Extinction Rebellion International has to say, and look at the ways in which we resist the divide and conquer and despair politics while we're actively pursuing solutions across the socioeconomic divides. We are empowered. It's the best therapy, and it's great, joyous, healing work.
I want to thank you, and I know you call pretty regularly, and I appreciate your insights and the suggestions you have. I also want to point out that people who regularly are involved in discussion with this show and with this station are doing a lot of good work. I don't mean to create within my own despair a sense of hopelessness, because I think things could turn around. I just don't think that things could turn around. I want to thank you for the call, and I want to go to the next caller, Sean, 231-8187. I believe you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Morning.
Hey, do you mind if I read a small excerpt from Herman Melville?
Yeah, as long as it's small.
Very small.
Okay.
For in tremendous extremities, human souls are like drowning men. Well enough they know they are in peril. Well enough they know the causes of that peril. Nevertheless, the sea is the sea, and these drowning men do drown.
That's nice.
It seems like that's kind of where we're at. Like, there's no shortage of people who understand we live, you know, on a planet with finite resources, and we operate under an economic system that demands consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder not to be a little apocalyptic. I appreciated the tenor of your poem this morning. It also reminded me of Yeats, The Second Coming.
Yes, I would that I were as good a writer as Yeats. But yeah, I'll have to read that poem to the audience at some point. Maybe many people aren't familiar with it, but you're right.
I'd love to hear that this morning, if you could just bring it up on the computer or something. But,
I don't have the ability to do that. I will do that, I promise, actually, as a thing for the new year.
I guess if I was going to try to make some sort of a contribution this morning, I was thinking of Lysistrata, the comedy.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. When I was first involved with the Storefront Theater, people probably don't even remember it. The first play that Tom Hill and Ann Garrity had us do was Lysistrata, as an open.
Perfect.
You know, it was great. It was that was the, you know, the 70s. That was probably a little bit sexist in ways, the nudity and other aspects of it, the sexuality of it, which was fun, but probably not great politics. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, but the overall approach of that play, in its
right.
own time and today, is useful, and it does reference, in essence, the notion of the power of the Earth Mother.
Right, and I guess I was also thinking of Rabbi Michael Lerner's book from about 14 years ago, The Left Hand of God, where he talked about a new bottom line.
Uh-huh.
So I was, you know, just trying to think of, like, how we got in this mess in the first place, and Rabbi Lerner, you know, basically is arguing, you know, so long as what we hold in high esteem, you know, are people who are quote-unquote successful, and these are the people who are going to go on and get married and have children and, you know, quote-unquote prosper, we've got to come up with a new way of valuing human behavior in our society.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe that's what made me think of Liz Estrada as well. Like, so long as being a quote-unquote good provider is a determinant of, you know, being productive and healthy, I can't see how we quite get out of this mess because, you know, obviously most people are going to, you know, try to fall into that category just to get all of their needs met. And we've got to come up with a new bottom line. We've got to come up with something, you know, a new way, a new yardstick of, you know, how we measure what's attractive, what's productive.
No, I'm going to interrupt you. I not because you're saying anything wrong, but I really want you to remind me what is the actual title of the eighth poem.
The Second Coming.
Second Coming. You know what?
Turning and turning and the widening
gyre.
The falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. And that's kind of where I forget the rest of the poem.
Well, I think my producer might be kind enough to find it on the net and give it to me. So I think it's worth reading, and I'm glad you reminded me of it. It's important, and I'm going to let you go and give a lot of other people a chance. But I do want to add one important thing.
Have a good morning, Joe.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you. Years ago, when I was even more arrogant and stupid and young, I was going to Columbia University, and I volunteered at the Catholic Worker House in the Lower East Side, feeding people meals, and I met Dorothy Day. Now, I want to make clear, I'm not a Christian, I'm not a religious person in any real sense, but Dorothy Day one time took me aside and said, you know, the worst sin, really, and the root sin, she felt, was despair. You have to keep on keeping on, which is corny hippie talk, but, you know, from her it was really very interesting. And she was really, the Catholic Worker Movement is a paradox, an anarchist Catholic movement, and she was a very, very strong, beautiful person. This was during the time when you know, Bayard Rustin and others were working on peace movement. It all looked to us at that point that we might have a nuclear war. Well, little did we know that that would not be the ultimate disaster. Other things would come between. So we're going to find the poem. And meanwhile, I would like to ask Linda to call us. She's hanging online. 231-8187. Linda, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a first-time caller, but long-time supporter and listener. And I wanted to, speaking of Gaia, I wanted to mention on the Democracy Now! Show that one of the guests was Pat Mitchell on a book, Becoming a Dangerous Woman.
Yes.
And I think all men and women out there should get that book, borrow that book, share that book, and read it. Because it might be our key to moving forward and feeling positive and having hope. And well, that's all I had to say.
No, thank you. And that's good advice. There's a lot of wisdom out there. It's not like we don't know what can be done. The question
right.
is, how do we organize and do it?
That's right. The organization is our key because there's a lot of great things going on right now, and there is, that gives us hope, but we've got to get organized.
Yes. Again, thank you. And I want to remind you of what Dorothy Day said. You know, the greatest sin, she thought, was
That's
despair.
Right.
We really have to watch out for that. And I'm afraid
I'm impressed. No despair.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm kind of a victim of it. Anyway, thank you very much.
I am too. I have to remind myself every day when I wake up.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. 231-8187. Let's go out to Harvey. You're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Well, I believe that 2020 will be a year of disruption in the fossil fuel and the energy utility industries because of something called blockchain technology. I might have mentioned it on your show before.
Uh-huh.
And the idea behind blockchain technology is fairly simple. By giving consumers total control over where they source their energy, which will open the door to the decentralization of power generation and distribution, making renewable energy sources more available to electricity consumers. And just like Uber and Lyft disrupted the taxi business, blockchain energy grids will dramatically change the way renewable energy is generated and distributed. And if you go to Google and put in blockchain technology, you can read about it, and also put in blockchain technology and renewable energy, and you'll see how the whole system works. There's already companies that are creating electronic power grids using blockchain technology, and this is the big disruption in the fossil fuel industry, and I believe that 2020 is the year that it'll come full force.
Well, I think this is something I know very little about, but I think that the thing you did mention that reminds me of the irony of things, the creation of the new taxis, as it were, Uber and Lyft and so on, actually has done a great deal to destroy the living wage of people who were unionized in the Teamsters Union, who were regular taxi drivers. So there's irony in all of that. But you're right. Things will change. Technologies will overcome our foolishness. And I want to thank you for the call. I guess I'm going to go to Molly, 231-8187. Molly, you're on the air.
Yes, I'll make it very brief. Along the lines of Gaia and slouching into Bethlehem, I'd like to read a very short poem that I wrote 4 years ago that popped up in the hope of the cycles. It's called Beginning Again.
Okay.
Another year is ending, the 11th hour brings a beginning again. In the stillness of December, Times Square alights, rounding. Out on the prairie, a farmer tips his hat, hopes for a good year. Spring not far off now, little shoots already starting to appear. Hoarfrost covers with a glisten, like a fairy shawl giving pause to reason. Great sun inching ever closer with each second on the clock, lights a day with brilliance countering the dark. All the seeds lie hidden, calling up the time when they can raise their tips, unfurling to begin again. That's my toast.
Well, that's sweet. That's good.
Tipping my hat to the new year, and I'll get off to let other people have the chance. But happy new year, even though we're all worried, but we'll keep the chant going. Happy new year.
Thank you very much.
2020 vision. May it come upon us all.
Hey, guess. Okay, thank you. Thank you. I guess I've been handed the poem that we were talking about. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood dim tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when the vast images of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it, red shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. What rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born. Now, that's a very Christian poem. I don't object to that. It's also a very beautiful piece of work, and it's also probably prophetic. So, you know, what I'm about today is a little bit mystical, not my usual thing, but also a little bit practical. I sense that the problems of the East-West struggle, the problems of the rising fascism in places like, of all places, Russia, and elsewhere, is in large part due to the failure of an agreement that was made to end nuclear wars and to end the struggle between the East and West in Europe. And that's an irony. And the reason why that happened to a great extent is that the profit makers, the war machine that dominates a lot of our economy, well, most of it, essentially got control or maintained control, and persuaded the political class to stay with it while it advanced the notion of utter defeat of the old Soviet bloc. And there's a big, big price to pay, and part of that price is Putin, and the other part of that price in modern politics is not just Putin, but Trump. So, you know, errors are made, mistakes are made, things can go wrong, but I'm still going back to Dorothy Day, you know. Despair is not that useful, even though I frequently feel it. And I am really interested in people's positive assertions around what's going on today. Because what is the expression? Sort of corny. It's always darkest before the dawn. Not so. But hey, I would really like to hear from people in consequence of this ended year. It's been a very nasty year, a very disappointing year. So, you know, if you have some ideas about what can be done and what should be done and what will happen or should happen, give us a call, 231-8187. I'm taking a deep breath here and pausing, thinking about this year and all that's gone on. I would never, ever have believed that a significant percentage of the American people would be so fooled and so badgered into supporting Donald Trump, who, you know, he talks about himself as a stable genius. I don't think he's stable, and I don't think he's a genius, and I don't think it's anything to be... I like to joke about it, but I don't think it's anything that's very funny. I think it's extremely dangerous, and I think that we are very likely to reap the whirlwind out of all of this. And I also think, when I think about the election, the previous election, gosh, why did the Democrats always go to the middle in fear of what is logically something that works all over Northern Europe, which is, let's face it, it's capitalism, but it's with social democracy. Where is that movement today? Why is it not stronger? Why can it not make clear the possibilities? It isn't a revolutionary idea. It really isn't. The idea of taking care of the poorest of us, the idea of making sure that all of us have the essentials of life, housing, food, healthcare, education, you know, that's not so far out. Not in this time where all of the mechanisms to deliver it are available. And yet, we're not. So, want to hear from you, 231-8187. Hey, Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, I was studying a concept in Canada called two-eyed seeing. It's an indigenous concept where it's a shared power model of sort of modern culture and traditional cultures together.
Huh.
And they're implementing that up in Canada in governmental type of situations. And it's going slowly, but it's going well. And the premise is that these two very different viewpoints align with each other, and then they start making policy with each other. So they get to know each other and connect. And we need two-eyed seeing for 2020. This is the time, and the concept of that one eye can't see, you know, in terms of modern research or traditional cultures, that we need both. And traditional cultures have traditionally been or completely left out of the discussion, and we need people with lived experience as part of the decision-making process in any decision made, and we need to insist on it, and especially in mental health organizations where community building is just not on the radar of most mental health organizations. And we have to start insisting on a 2020 50-50 model where it's shared decision-making.
I think that's very, very true, and I think it's very useful. And actually implementing it is also very difficult. But I think your point...
I disagree. I think it's quite easy. And people in leadership, and I've been talking to county leaders, I'm in Eugene, and they're very receptive to it. It's not a threat to people in power currently. It's just supplementing what they do. And now, at the very top, of course, people will be resistant. But throughout local governments and all the places we should be implementing this, people are extremely receptive to, because they know that the system is not working and that they're in log jams of policy making that only includes one perspective, and they know it's failing, and they're extremely receptive to people with lived experience being part of it. And Multnomah County is pretty far along with that, with sort of peer strategies in mental health. But once it starts and works in mental health, it has to be applied throughout all policy of all types. But mental health is just abysmal in how little they build community and how little they share power. And they are totally receptive to it, the people in power in mental health. They get it if we approach them with it.
I think that's very, first of all, very interesting. I don't know much about what is going on at this level, at the level you're talking about. But I'm hopeful just because of your call. And I want to thank you for it. And I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to see if there aren't a lot of other people who want to say something. It is the end of the year. It is the beginning of a new year. People like myself who get into the habit of despair, even though I criticize that concept, we probably are making a mistake, because I don't think despair yields much in the way of creative energy and much of a help in anything. And I also feel, and I think this is really important, that we have fallen into a pattern as a nation where we have been so busy since the end of World War II demonizing reform movements. It's a weird thing, because the Roosevelt administration, the response to the Great Depression of that time, were pretty much successful. There was an intervening significant variable, of course, which was World War II. And we also need to understand that in World War II, a great deal of harm was done. Many communities, most notably the Japanese-American community, were abysmally treated. So there is not necessarily a force for justice in the situation. But the defeat of fascism, at least the temporary defeat of fascism, is a hopeful sign for humanity. And I don't think we should forget it. Right now, fascism has a friendly face. Most of us don't even recognize it when it's happening. And it's to me, extremely creepy that a true fascist is the head, the president of the United States, and using everything but the truth to dominate politics, and having a huge support base of angry, sad people, most of whom are Caucasian, most of whom are men, I would add. Anyway, I would love to hear from you in the context of what I'm talking about. I am awkward in getting into mythological or mystical concepts, not being good at that which I cannot see. And I really, coming out of a background of teaching history and sociology, see how we got to where we are, but I don't see how we can get out of where we are without a disaster first. So I'd love to hear from you. This is a kind of loose show, and I planned it that way. Reading poetry, for goodness sake. Okay, let's go to a caller, 231-8187. Jim, save us.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm okay, man.
And Happy New Year. This we could talk for hours about the problems that exist in the world right now, but a couple of analogies. I think we're trying to fix the car. We're trying to change spark plugs while we're still driving.
Okay.
You know, we have to stop, take a breath, see what works, keep it, what doesn't, get rid of it. I want a revolution. Ben Franklin said we should have a revolution every 20 years. You know, I mean, I think the whole world, you look around the world, people are up in arms. Around the world, it's time for a worldwide revolution. How do you make that happen? Well, it's been said too many times, follow the money.
Always good advice. Always good advice.
The people of the world can start a revolution if they just delay or withhold their taxes. Watch the rats jump off the ship then. That's my two cents. I love conundrums, I love puzzles, and I've been thinking about this for years. I'm 70 years old, I've been seeing it happen. Follow the money. If you cut off the funding, watch them all jump off that ship.
Hey, listen, thanks a lot for the call, man.
Thank you for the conversation.
Okay. Hey, people calling us and wanting to talk. It's important that we have this last conversation. 231-8187. Hey, somebody with a great name. Joseph, you're on the air.
Hey, my brother and I both have electric cars.
Cool. I wish I could afford one.
Well, actually, there's cheap ones out there to be had.
Oh, okay.
Used ones, and they're fun to drive. And since we use a lot of hydropower, they're pretty clean. We still use natural gas a lot, but I have time of day electricity use, so it's cheap to charge, like 50 cents for 100 miles.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, what counts is when you get people in the pocketbook, you know, bam. And so, you know, back to the fascists, weren't our early fascists like Reagan and Nixon, weren't those guys fascists?
Well, they were, yeah. I think that they wouldn't understand and wouldn't believe that they were fascists, but I'll call them proto-fascists, for lack of a better term.
And wasn't it Reagan who pulled the rug out of Gorbachev when we promised to support them when the wall fell and they were asking for help? What did we do? We turned our back on them.
Well, I don't know about turning our back. In fact, we armed ourselves in preparation for a victory. And yes, you're right. That was Reagan.
And the Russian whatever mafia, I hate to use that word because it's loaded with my ancestors claim that one, but you know they took over then, and we could have stopped it then. And same thing with the Vietnam, when they had a corrupt government, they asked who first to get rid of the French. They asked the U.S. and we turned our back on them. We turn our back on people we could help. And in this context, look at all the people on the street that we could help. We spend more money on ameliorating the problems that they create instead of being proactive and caring for these people and being compassionate. And I think that's a big thing. Everyone is so locked into their own, what do you call that, selfishness, that we lose compassion. And the solutions are easy. You know, there's this guy who came from a family of a company who fell down on drugs and fell into the street and then came back. Are we still there?
Yeah.
Okay. And he came back and made millions of dollars and is living in Northwest. He single-handedly could reopen Hooper. If you know what Hooper is.
Yeah, Hooper Center. I remember.
Good old Hoop.
I didn't realize it was closed, but yes.
Well, it's having tough times right now. And him, coming from his background, single-handedly could support Hooper. I don't know what he's doing with his almost $30 million that he built that company and sold it. And we're not naming names. But, you know, I think that the solutions are easy. We just need to spend money. And money is just the grease. Money isn't anything. People worship money. And money is just a tool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't need to be bean counting. Look how much money is wasted on advertising and accounting and tax collecting. It's just a foolish game. You know, people need to step back from that and have good lives. And what the bottom line is, community. That's what everyone's looking for, is good community.
Yeah, simple, I think you're simple, right.
Simple. We just have to get away from ourselves and be bigger.
Anyway, listen, I want
to grow up.
I appreciate your positivism, and I think it's interesting that there is lots of money sitting out there not being used to good cause. And I think it's also interesting that people are still working hard on solving these problems. I want to get some other people on the air, give them a chance.
Just one more thing.
Okay.
I would love to build a statue to Chelsea and those three, Chelsea and I'm forgetting their names now, Snowden and the other one that's in jail, the journalist.
Okay, man.
And then they have them standing on the heads of Alan and John Dulles.
That's a funny image.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for the call. 231-8187. Let's go to Adele. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say something positive. The past 2 days on Amy Goodman, she had Michael Moore on.
Yeah.
And the last hour that she had him on, I felt very hopeful because he said, talking about the consistent support that Bernie has, and that the Democratic Party is now starting to realize how much support he does have, because I think the only way out of this mess is to have him elected. And so he had a very positive message. If anybody missed it, they should listen to the second hour that she did.
Yeah, and, you know, people can do that by going to KBOO.com, you know, and so on.
Right, right. Yeah, because he described him as being like a dog with a bone. He won't let go. He'll answer the questions, and he's been has the same views that he had 40 years ago, and he's not a fake. And people should just not be afraid to give him a chance.
Well, so, I appreciate the comment. I am forbidden to support a particular candidate. But I appreciate when people call in with their support and their ideas. And I think that it's important. We're going to have a chance to decide, maybe, for a social Democrat or for a centrist as the Democratic candidate for president. It's going to be an interesting struggle. And I want to thank you for your call.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. 231-8187. Dan, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. This is... you're really going out this year with a bang. This is the best show I've heard all year. And I just got a whole page of notes on things.
Okay.
So, good job. But,
thank you.
You remember that advertisement, TV advertisement some years back where they had a, they made a fake butter, margarine, and...
I can't believe it's not butter and Mother Nature is angry, that one?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. There was a lot of interesting symbolism in there.
Sure.
And, you wonder if somebody behind the scenes wasn't trying to get a message out, but...
Nah.
I think that...
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. I think that we're just trying to, you know, things are so bad because people are trying to wake up, and consciousness is the most important. Becoming more conscious is what we have to be doing, and it seems like the only way to do that is through some suffering, unfortunately, or whatever.
Oh, please, no. We got enough people suffering in this country. But...
Yes, we do, and. The community is where it's at, and there's a quote that I ran across lately that talks about the despair that we're all having to struggle with, and so that's so good about what you said about Doris Day. But this quote is by Brené Brown. And it's about how to help with that and help each other with their despair. And it goes like this: no one reaches out to you for compassion or empathy so you can teach them how to behave better. They reach out to us because they believe in our capacity to know our darkness well enough to sit in the dark with them.
Hey, that's sweet. Listen, I want to give some other people an opportunity.
Thanks a lot, Joe. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. The last show of the year, by golly. 231-8187. Pat, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Joe. So much. I was very moved by the last caller. And I wanted to also address and really appreciate you bringing up Dorothy Day and the notion, of that despair, I think you quoted her as saying, is a sin. And interestingly, anecdotally, is that Dorothy Day is going to be canonized by the Catholic Church.
Really?
Only under the auspice of a Pope Francis, with some of his failings in his humanity. But nonetheless, there we are. So talk about looking at something like that, because she was just such an amazing human being. And it caused me to find on my bookcase Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Some of us on the line may be familiar, you know, with his work. And and so we know that he was, you know, in his whole family, his young wife, they were all killed in the concentration camps during the Holocaust. And, you know, he survived, and he survived to bring to us not only his therapeutic approach, but also how do we find meaning in suffering. And it seemed to me, and I hadn't thought about this before this, coming together this morning, that despair, I wrote down, is a luxury, and it's filled with self-indulgence. And so when I move into that despair, I am busy in my little pity pot. And does it do any good for anybody at all? And so the notion of, you know, when, not if, but when, you know, I move into that despair and looking at the reality of where we're at today, I don't have a right to do that. You know, I don't have a right to do that. And so I just wanted to, you know, bring that up. It was a very, very uplifting to hear you quote Dorothy Day, who I absolutely adore. So thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah, I just don't have a right to go into despair. Thanks.
Well, and you're boosting my sense of guilt. All right, listen, thank you very much for your call. I think it's important to understand that what Dorothy Day was talking about is something that's so easy to fall into, and I do that a lot. In fact, I think I do it way too much, the sense of despair. And I think one of the things we need to do is historically analyze how we get to where we are. One of the things that's really important to understand is that the schools, the public schools, the educational system, and the life experience of most working people pushes them into a fearful place. And one of the things we're seeing, and one of the things Trump exploits, is this enormous fear of persons of color and of women that we're seeing manifested in the current reactionary politics of the Republican Party. Anyway, I want to get some more calls. 231-8187. Ronnie, you're on the air. Ronnie, are you there? No. No? Okay. I guess I talk too much. That'd teach me a lesson. Anyway, the important thing that I would like to leave us with is that while I cannot, and you cannot, I don't think, make an analysis of what is to be done outside of what is obviously politically possible, we all can understand that the situation is grave, and that a lot of hatred, particularly recently, the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Islamic sentiments, all of which are indirectly caused, I believe, by the current administration, all of that is stuff that we can analyze, can understand the causes of, and really can fight. And it's very important. It is not useful. It is not at all useful to think that things are going so bad that, hey, they're going to never get better. And incidentally, speaking of getting better, Ronnie's on the air. You're back.
Hi, I was waiting, and it seems the phone seemed to hang up on me. This is my first time calling, so I'm a little nervous. But I had this issue with making socialism a dirty word. It seems Republicans think that that's an awful thing, and I think it's the most humanitarian thing we ever did in this country.
Uh-huh.
But I'm wondering, if the Republicans are so against socialism, would they mind denying their Social Security checks? Just turn them back.
Well, I think,
give them back.
I think that the problem of the term socialism is that it has been made into a dirty word, and of course it was utilized in totalitarian regimes of the Eastern Bloc. So really, and the theory, that theory of dominant theory of the Soviet Union, which is socialism will yield to communism, etc., in a totalitarian context, that's where a lot of that comes from. But also, you're right, the ruling class is terrified of not just the concept of socialism, but any kind of social democracy, even though we've seen in Northern Europe an effective use of socialist ideas and support for the poor and for the needy, is even as money's getting made. Hey, listen, Happy New Year. We've run
Happy
out of
New
time.
Year,
and okay. I wish you all a very good season. And, you know, don't get too despairing. It can either get better or worse, but you'll never know until it glows. See you later. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, it features a lecture from author and activist Arundhati Roy on Modi's India. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein features a pair of interviews on the new Space Force, and at 11 on Stage and Studio, they present the final episode in the series Indigify. At 11:30, an archive episode of Art Focus, where Joseph Galavan interviews installation artist Laura Fritz. KBOO is an independent, non-commercial community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. And today is the last day to make a donation through the Willamette Week Give Guide. Just go to kboo.fm/give, or if you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
One of the great challenges in helping local folks who are homeless, they may be camping out, living in a car, sleeping on a friend's couch, or some other transient arrangement, is to make regular contact with them. In Episode 3 of Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, Alita, the president of the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center, talks about how they reach out to the homeless to provide needed services. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to Audio, Podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
Join KBOO by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KBOO app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been a member of the RSS all his life. He's a creation of the RSS. In Modi's second term, the RSS has...